California Chinese American Oral History Project, jointly sponsored by the UCLA Asian American Studies Center and the Chinese Historical Society of Southern California. This is a duplicate tape of Mrs. Lily Lam Chen's interview. Tape 3. From original 90 minutes to a 60-minute tape.
Okay.
You can't see Emma here. Let me give Emma a crack because she can't see.
I was going to ask, you were asked about, what the Chinese children, had, who they had for playmates. How about you yourself? Did you have mostly Caucasian or Chinese playmates when you were a young girl?
I got, I think about 50-50. The fact is, we live in outside of Chinatown. And the fact is that I'm very interested in school activities, high school, whatever school activity. I always participate as a little small leader, So I'm mixed with the Chinese too. On the other hand, the Chinese, the school language school, I always pretty obedient, and the teachers always. Lily, you come out and help them do this and announce this and that. Before I knew it, I wasn't in stage fright anymore. On Mother's Day or Family Day, whatever, school day, the PTA day you call it. Then the teacher would let me recite the little poem I wrote in Chinese and I recited it to them. I'll make a speech and he corrected it. And then I make a talk. And so I was trained as a little youngster, to be in front of crowd and because to help the teacher. And when they teach Mandarin in the school then, the mothers all came, they don't understand what the Mandarin teacher was going to preside that day, is going to say. So Mr. So Siming, he's from Suzhou, and he taught us Mandarin at the one of the Chinese school. I remember, he said, Lily, you wear a uniform, white skirt, white dress, a blouse, a Chinese blouse, the kind of open here, and then a blue scarf, that's our uniform. You go up there and stand next to me. I obey, I just stand next to him. Before I knew it, he was rattling a speech for the mothers, thanking them for coming Friday afternoon for the last session to know what we need. Imagine what can we teach when we were so young, but then they have the replica of the Chinese school in our language school in Chinatown. But anyway, the association I have is between both worlds, two worlds, and I adjust very well. But most of them are with the Chinese. Most of the children growing up with me, we all talk Chinese. All day long they talk Chinese. They live in the store upstairs, they come down and the workers' children are Chinese. They go to Chinatown, they're Chinese, stores are Chinese. And the English is always a little more accented than, with Chinese tones than the Los Angeles. Los Angeles children are much better when it comes to talking English language because you don't have that background as a, ghetto strong, accent.
But then now in San Francisco, when you tell, you had not only something you can say, yeah. So how did they resolve this language? How do you learn both languages?
I guess I'm just a language minded, Ever since I was a kid, I studied Latin and Spanish. And after that, I studied Italian and Japanese, but the Japanese is tougher for me than Chinese, because that phonetic is so, it has no, rationality. You have to remember. I kind of get older. I feel like, wasting my time to try to make more languages. So I guess I'm language minded. Anybody that talks to me once or twice, I absorb their intonation. So that's why I'm an interpreter.
But what about the other kids?
The other kids, they speak their language, their local dialect.
So that means that Samyak kids usually just hang out with Samyak kids?
Yeah, usually.
Kids hang out with them.
No, they can mix with in school, but then they talk. In San Francisco, I see more Samyak speak spoken.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, in here, I hear more Sayak Wang.
Mm-hmm.
In San Francisco, there are Samyak speaker more general.
Mm-hmm.
See? Samyak Wang is in Chinese school. And I think that, too, this Los Angeles population, we all scattered, you know, all different areas. But in San Francisco, Chinatown, they all can climb, they meet the centralized. And even if you live up the hill there, you can come down to YWCA, YMCA, the Chinese school, the Hok Hao, and the St. Mary's School has a big, you know, society there of their own, Chinese American school, and then they all, you know, see each other. And then the interdenomination evening school for the Protestant churches. And then we have the English school classes by the churches. Mrs. Leung Jung used to teach here, you know. We have evening classes where one lady like you or anybody else spend an hour or 2 hours a week and teaching the hard work, you know, laborers. And then all the ladies from China or the girls who have never been exposed to language, they just don't have it. We got all kinds of Salvation Army was a very strong model of this sort of work.
Well,
and then they bang all the way down to the Chinatown, Grand Avenue. And then they are real workers, even up here they are, all over.
Kind of have two questions, they're kind of related to each other. Then, for example, would a Samyak parent prefer to see their children marry Samyak rather than Sayak or something else?
Depends on the education of the mother and father. If they're educated, they don't care. The Chinese, yes. Even Northerner, they don't mind. But if they're not educated, because Sayak Ama, could rather won't say Yip Dola, Ama. Hong San, one Hong San. See, they're different types. Now those that are cosmopolitan minded, are a little bit more, say, more advanced, I don't want to say that they're less educated. And then they don't care, and someone's Chinese. And even to the extent, even if they're Asian, you know, but it's very late, not until after the Second War. But prior to the Second War, it's practically unheard of anybody marrying outside of Chinese or Americans, you know. Nowadays, it's nothing.
Did parents frown on interracial marriage, or was
yes.
it just that the opportunity just never arose?
No, they frowned on it in a way because they don't know the language. I don't want to know Isai, I can't understand him, or vice versa, you know. You know what I mean? It's a language barrier. The moment they understand language, they don't feel the gap. The gap is because they're not educated to the point where you and I can tolerate, you know, understand, well, it doesn't matter. If it's a good boy, if he's a good boy, he's got a good livelihood, and he's a kind person, to treat my child right, that's all you that's the criteria, see. But before, there is a fear.
But
a fear.
Wouldn't it be possible for people to be more tolerant about Noisai than about Senpu? That, you know, like, oh, maybe it's all right if my daughter marries a non-Chinese, but my son must marry a Chinese. Would there be more emphasis placed on the son marrying Chinese?
Definitely, there is still a strong feeling that the man in the family, that the son, is more primarily important. But I think any parent would rather, if they are of that mindedness, they not be involved in a mixed something, mixed marriage of any kind. Even they call it out of their village. Even the Hong San, a lot of them say, well, Hong San, I like to have Hong San Dusai, and the first thing with Samyak. But it all depends on the parents' education and their exposure to the community and to the life they lead. See.
Was there ever any intermarriage with
Bayan?
With non-Bayan, right, with Mexicans or blacks or?
Few, very few. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's really accidental that a child go to school, you know, a teenager, and happen to have a good schoolmate. But it isn't, I would say, it's not a popular thing. But they once in a while we have a Mexican boys in the city here, you know, half Mexican. And
what
about
Japanese?
Yes, we have that too.
Uh-huh.
Of course, the only time when they were mad at the Japanese is during the Second War, you know.
Uh-huh.
But other than that, the Japanese are Orientals. Their heritage also more or less from the same screen, you know. It's been changed because of travel, see. So they're not there. But they wish, of course, like every heritage. I know Europeans the same way, you know. I belong to the Women's International Club. A German wants to marry a German heritage person, you know, and if they marry something else, they have to tolerate if the child won't give up, you know. I mean, if the son or daughter is dogmatic about it, I'll marry anyway, then they have to bless them, see. But I think there's a tendency, like the Chinese have, that if they could marry within the race and at the same time the village, if possible. Uh-huh. It all depends on the family, the parents, who they are.
And what kinds of, now you were saying that a lot of parents were saying, well, I don't have education, but I want my kids to have an education so they can get a better job. What would be some of the kinds of jobs they would want their kids to get?
They want them to be a good teacher and a merchant.
Uh-huh.
They usually say, you know, a highly educated person, a cultural, more than money. Some of them, the villager, of course, they say, if he can make some money, he, you know, means make money. Now, there's no generalization in this point. Some of them like to be dedicated as a minister, a doctor, attorney, or a teacher, or a professor, or just a worker in the civil service. Some of them want to go and make money. See? The same with every generation.
Yeah. So if someone owned his own little grocery store, his own little laundry, would he want to, you know, give it to one of his kids to continue, or would he think it's better?
He wants him to go and get a civil service job.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he wants to hire. He wants him to go to kung fu to kung lama. You know, go to work with the government. They know that the government is permanent and also has fringe benefit. They're not dumb, that these villagers, you know. They say, I never had it, but I know if once I skip to make the children have it, you know. To save as much as I can, they will become somebody, and they can lead and take care of the younger one. They think, you know, and usually they do. Big brother is like the second head of the family. If father died, the oldest son would have to take over, whether you want it or not, according to tradition. Take over, and his education gave him this job, and he will have to help the other brother to go through the same training in his own a talent, by his own talent, and then so on and so forth. That's how many of these families, there's some families I know that the mother is Heng Haiyan, practically, but she is a very good Christian, and she raised a whole bunch of children, a group of very, very noble citizens. To me, a citizen is good and prominent if he can contribute from what he learned. I'm not talking about those that purely making gold and to be successful. They are successful in a way, but I'm thinking of the generation of welfare that they give to the world, right?
Yeah. You talk about Christians, though. The Chinese people, are they like Buddhists or Taoists, or are they into Protestant Methodism?
Well, the olden times, they don't all go to church, and the missionaries are doing their best, have done their best. Those that have an opportunity to be brought into the Christian church, naturally, they get more advanced, you know, more modern, see, and then more broad-minded too, you know, far-sighted too. And yet, those that cannot come out at all, you know, like the two generations, they have a philosophy of Confucius. They have been instilled when they were childhood to do this, and only about a dozen of proverbs they follow. It's just like their Bible.
So in Los Angeles, the people are, some of them are modernized,
yeah. Not all of them. And even today, they're bringing the Buddhists in too, because they're on account of free cults, you know. Basically, the Chinese are very much Confucianist, mystic.
So would you say that most people continue to buy zhouzhong at home?
Most of the villagers.
Qibasanjipai there.
Yeah, the villagers only. Those that have studied in China in schools, you know, like a Christian school or in the city, they don't necessarily have ancestral worship, you know, shelf.
Mm-hmm.
In the country, well, if they came from the village and they just settled there forever, for 50 years and never moved from there, they all have a shelf with the sanjipai, you know, and then the incense and the fruits and stuff like that. That's a picture of their grand folk, you know. And then they would lift their heongwa to show their respect. I have a doctor, even a modern doctor, he would do that because he wasn't a Christian, you know. That's no sin, you know, that's you know, the reference they call it. So it's not really as a god, as a respectful filial piety, you call it.
Now, you did a lot of work as a court interpreter, so maybe you could tell us, like, what kinds of court cases, what reasons would there be for Chinese to get into courts? Were they naturalization cases or lawsuits or what?
All right. Years ago, 2 or 3 decades ago, it started with an immigration problem. You know, the people are in deep, 4 or 3 cases, you know. It's a terrible thing to go through, the grill that they have to go through. So, one of the workers were on a vacation, a friend of mine, an attorney, asked me to go down to San Pedro and help him with a day. And I said, I don't like to go to San Pedro. It takes a red train to go there. I went. I said, I don't, but I went. I didn't. So when I hear the problems that they create for these Chinese people, the question they ask, as though they already belong to the electric chair, that's severe. I was moved. I said, how come Gahang or Ditong? How come we have to suffer all this just because my family didn't have to go through that? I said, it's very bad. And then night after night, I recall the question they asked of these poor Chinese people.
What kinds of questions?
Oh, I'll tell you later. I will tell you the reason how I evolved into this sort of work. And so I came home and told my husband, I said, gee, I hate to go around that way, but I don't want to hurt Mr. Randall. He's a good friend of the family. You know him too. He was the one that helped a lot of Chinese Americanized or naturalized. So that was my beginning of you know, a little kind of feeling hurt of that we Chinese are being stepped all over. Then later on, there were some cases where people want to become naturalized. They can't speak the language. And they said, if you're so many years old, came over to America, someone with a certain condition, you can use a Chinua. So I went and get all the examination paper. Went up Chinatown to a corner on a street there and explained to them that. And don't come with in Siyawawa. And you know, my Siyawawa was pretty lousy then, but I made it, and I expect them to understand. And I said, these are questions they must ask, they may ask this and they may not ask. So that a few of these guys get passed, you know. And a woman, these people. And then it's whisper all Chinatown. Then when I ask Chen Song, see, now you ask this chance you can help. And before you were flooded with phone calls, I said, no, I can't do that. I said, I can't, I've got enough time. And I said, you've got to learn it yourself. And that, some of them don't meet the requirement, me to help push her along. But then there's another kind. And later on, as the years go by, there are some modernized people that have a marital problem. And then later on, then they learn to fight the probate court. You know, Papa has a big asparagus farm and have 6 children. One of the sister-in-law is a little nasty, one extra share for the son, because her husband was the company, the longest or something. And then you have this sort of cases. Now, you want me to know, to give you the kind of cases that I can recall, you know. And then later on, and then you have these people buy businesses and don't know the language and sign any old thing. And get into a jam, you see. And then you have the delinquent boys, bunches of them through the years, you know. And then who doesn't speak English? Mom and daddy, crying with the youngest baby on the lap and in the hallway there, waiting for the verdict of the little rascals, they call them, the naughty boys. And then now you have a business corporation problem, you know, maritime ship that come into the United States and violate something they don't know because they are foreign, you know, as captain. So we're almost in everything now. That's a possibility. So I go down to the ship then, listen to the story and go to the dictionary prior that night, you know, and to look up all the parts of the ship so I can translate it. You know, I'm not a nautical person. Things like that, you know. Sometimes they're easy, like a, you know, ordinary question. But then the problems are severe. You know, millions of dollars have been, you know, chiseled by some of these Jewish people who befriend with you, take you to a party and ask you to sign the contract, and then you don't know about it. And then tell them, they said, another Chinese guy that is with him. Things like that happen in our midst today. And then all the other things that happen, you know, like whatever problem human nature has. We have 1 or 2 Chinese cases now and then on that. And then marital problems and fighting for the split between, you know, the new law, the split, everything 50-50. You have to prove that this is by yourself prior to getting married, just proof during the marriage and all that thing. That's sort of an unnecessary fight. So it's not a pleasant story. It's not a pleasant job when you spend a few hours with them. And it's very heavy. Heavy, way over your head. But thank God that I was doing this before this sort of problem came to the court. And so far, I'm still carrying, you know, I didn't make a blunder so that they can, you know, kick me out and say that, well, you didn't do a good job. I'm getting old, I don't know, I'm training somebody to step in and do it. See, you have to have Mandarin, Cantonese. Cantonese 总分开各种土谈, local dialect. Right? And then 土谈之中, they still have accent, you know.
Yeah.
Guoyu isn't Guoyu until you live in Peking. You have all kinds of Guoyu. Everybody's saying they speak Guoyu, but they have a different accent. See?
Yeah.
And then when a particular word, you have to say something. See, if I'm not careful, I could miss
later on.
One word. There was one time that one person did that. Only that wasn't important. The scale could go the other way. So I got to be wide awake the night before. I got to get all my sleep so I could stand in front of that box, you know, like one of those guys that being asked questions, the witness stands. So. But I enjoyed it because I feel that I'm, you know, alleviating them, and that's better than giving them a dinner, you see. And most of them are very, the 中国人, if they're cultural, they're very appreciative, Mandarin or not. They're very appreciative. They don't have money. They're like, oh, someday I'm going to take you to tea or something. Sunday I'll take it. See? You just thank them. So don't say no. So you say, I thank you, I appreciate it. And then let it be. And if they bump into you on the street, then if you're sitting across the street, maybe pay $2.50 for your child fund or something like that, then that's all right. But I never accept anything. I just do it for the sake of, I love this kind of work. And my father has his blood in me, and my mother has her blood in me. I can't get out of it. My husband said, how come you never get tired? Don't you want to stop at a certain point? I said, please, if you say stop, maybe the Lord will stop me and I'll be going away. That's the way I cheated your uncle, family, you know. I said, I can't, you know, quit. You know, my husband sometimes gets a little bit, you know, kind of worried about me overtaxing myself.
You mentioned, may I?
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
You mentioned it sounds like mostly civil property type cases. Is that because you were not involved in criminal courts, or is that
criminal? Yes.
Or not that much.
I tell you a case. You remember San Diego a couple of years ago? There was a doctor and a dentist that killed the wife of the doctor,
mm-hmm.
and the brother-in-law joined hands or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Did you know they don't trust anybody down there? And the court, the judge. Call up the Superior Court up here to ask for a reliable, you know, honest-to-goodness attorney, interpreter. And they call me. I said, where? San Diego. I said, I can't go to San Diego. I have a family here. And they said, well, we're going to pay for your, you know, fly, and then you can live in a nice place, and then we take care of everything. So I told my husband about it. My husband said, well, if they're that endearing, I'll go with you. He said, I don't want to leave my husband alone for 3 to 4 days, maybe a whole week, you know, in San Diego court. Yes, murder.
So the
rape.
So Chinese throughout these years have sometimes...
Yeah, but they are the... I tell you, some of them are being raped, you know, Chinese girl being raped. But that particular case was bad. Bad for the Chinese. The doctor allowed the brother, who is an in-law, to do a job, you know, murder that this his wife, because the mother-in-law thinks that she's too that she's stingy, that she didn't give her a bank book or something, that she, you know, she has some, you know, cool saving, that being a sampo, being a daughter-in-law, she should trust her and let her have the control of that security or whatever saving, or something to that effect, you know, and then the poor girl didn't want to. So they suffer her, you know, they punish her this way and that way, until one day they decide to dump her into the toilet or something, you know. And they reproduce the whole house, you know. When I looked into it, I said, oh my gosh, how am I going to stand up straight? Where she was, you know, murdered or killed. And then the blood stain on the bed, and then the shoes of the brother-in-law, something was that. I shouldn't even tell you this thing, but it's just as a case, not as a personal. You asked me if murder, rape, yes? they're rape cases that, that the Chinese are involved, you know, the girls, you know. And so, what else?
Well,
unpleasant.
It's a little past noontime, so mm-hmm. maybe I'll just ask you one more question and then
okay.
we should probably break.
Okay, fine.
Taking up a lot of your time.
I hope I'm hitting the point somehow.
Yeah, oh no, definitely you are. You know, obviously, you know, people would not go to a court of law unless they had to. So if there were some disputes that could be solved without going to law court, mm-hmm. you know, how would people do it? Would they get a middleman in Chinatown to arbitrate or, you know, ask an association to judge?
There are two types. One type is the uneducated people who cannot read English and have been here but haven't been exposed to the Western world and ways of life. Then you have the modern educated kind, you know, that they at least have children who are educated. Now, the latter kind would seek out an attorney and confide and try to settle the problem. But the other kind, the first type, would try to talk to one of the clansmen or maybe a confidant and ask him whether he could represent him or get somebody in his clan to represent him to talk to the other clan who's involved with another surname and to talk peace and maybe Tian Yam Cha, you know, put on a dinner or where they can soften their hatred, you know, reduce their attention. So there are the two kinds. Now, in the olden times, which is purely the first type,
mm-hmm.
you got to bring it to the Gongso of the two person involved in the conflict,
mm-hmm.
and then go to the neutral one, which is supposed to be Zhonghua Weigun type, as a townhouse like, and then present, after they talk it over and they evaluate who's right to how many percent, 30, 70, or 40, 60 degrees of right or wrong, then you tell the Zhonghua Weigun, huh? Zhonghua Weigun have a hearing, and then Zhonghua Weigun will say, well, that should be done, and they usually have to take it. And sometimes they're not happy with Zhonghua Weigun's decision, or the Chinese Consolidated Benevolent Association finding, or decision, and they would maybe come and get a gang and shoot off the other guy, you know. That's where the town war began. But if they are contented with the solution or the verdict, you know, or decision, and then they would just settle, and maybe you pay, you know, so much money, you know, to, just like the way we have a peace, you know, a settlement, peaceful settlement at court, you know. That can be done too. That had been done before. But today they are still a little, that old-fashioned way for many of those who are not totally westernized to be able to say, well, I can stand in front of a judge or court without getting, you know, all mixed up, see. So there you are.
Do you have tongue fights down here?
Hmm?
Do you have tongue fights down in Southern California?
Oh, the tongue fight is really nothing but the organization of Plan District Organization. There's a group of young boys
yeah.
that belong to it. You know, that's auxiliary. And they, you know, hear something they don't like, you know, that my clansman is being hurt. They go and take their own freedom, just like the way they do with the, you know, the American, you know, the gangs.
Yeah.
But really not exactly a town. Everything is changed into a benevolent association now. If they were, in the early days when they were young boys, you know, they have learned that they must better call it the Fraternal Society, the Masonic Club or whatever. But inside there's still a little sort of that old-fashioned feeling, you know. A few of them that might be a little bit more ferocious in the way they say, well, Aquila, Aquila, but then they have these so-called, you know, the veteran of the, you know,
mm-hmm.
advisory group. They would cope, you know, I mean, calm them down and say, well, we settled. Yeah, I did wrong to this woman. Let's pay her, you know, $500 and Chen Shifan, you know, we talk peace and drink and so on and so forth. Those are good days. You know, in comparison with the way you have to go to court, wait for the court a whole day, wait for the sub-court, and the attorneys sometimes change because the things drag on too long, and the judges change, you know, the positions, you know. It's a tough thing to go to court. I feel sorry for them. If I had anything to do with it, I usually say, if you can, talk peace is cheaper. You don't have to hire this and hire the court fees.
Yeah.
It's terrific. It's so bad that by the time you get through winning your case, sometimes, unless it's a big sum, you know, you don't get much. Well, peace
yeah.
is the key word. You know, peaceful thinking and peaceful attitude can, you know, solve and reduce a lot of tension,
yeah.
you see. And I hope that I have covered a little
no,
bit.
I'm sure everybody has a lot of
My observation may not be perfect.
The preceding was an interview for the Chinese American Oral History Project of Southern California. It was conducted on November the 4th, 1978, from 10 till 12 a.m. The interviewee was Mrs. Lily Lum Chan. The principal interviewer was June May. Other members of the Southern California Chinese Historical Society were also present.